Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
Nobody is immune to the stress that has come with the COVID-19 pandemic and the restrictions that it's placed on all of our lives. As far as children are concerned, coronavirus may be less harmful to their bodies than it is to those of older people, but it may be more difficult for kids to deal with emotionally than it is for other age groups.
On this episode, we'll take a look at the mental health impact of the pandemic on children and teenagers with our guest, Dr. Mary Alvord, who's a children's psychologist in Maryland and co-author of Resilience Builder Program for Children and Adolescents, which focuses on enhancing the ability to adapt well to life and its challenges. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Pleased to be here today.
I think all of us could use some tips on adapting well to life's challenges during the pandemic, but I'm wondering how you're seeing children and teenagers especially being impacted by it.
You know, I think it has gone in phases because, of course, things are in constant change. You know, so much of the time we think about uncertainty aligned with anxiety, but now what we are certain of is constant uncertainty. So in the beginning of the pandemic, and I would say mid-March, when the schools, most of the schools on the East Coast started shutting down, kids were concerned and anxious about grandparents because the first word out was, you know, we have to stay home to protect our grandparents and, you know, people who are frail. And over time, what the restrictions have meant is they also impacting them on a daily life, because not only were they switched to online schooling, which was new for them, but it was also new to the teachers. So the schools were quickly trying to adapt. Everyone was trying to adapt. Families, you know, parents who were fortunate enough to still have jobs were trying to work, juggle childcare because the childcare centers had shut down, trying to help kids with online. So a great deal of stress on so many levels. And what began hitting kids was the lack of seeing their friends, which is something, a normal part of childhood that they do every day in school.
And then obviously that's creating tension between the parents and the kids, because the kids are going to put their anger towards their parents saying, well, why can't I be seeing my friends all the time at school? And maybe you can make it better by making sure that I can hang out with my friends on the weekends or outside of normal school activities. And they're putting a lot of guilt on the parents. And I've often wondered to myself, if I were in that situation, how would I be treating my mom? So what are you seeing in terms of that, and how can parents deal with the guilt they're feeling about this, even though it's out of their control?
Right. You know, I think there's a number of emotions kids have expressed, as well as behavioral problems that often come back to their feeling sad and more alone, or then they're angry or they're worried and anxious. I think the most important thing for parents to do is talk about it, communicate, even at the youngest levels, that this is something we're all doing together to keep everyone safe, and it is based on science and what we understand, and we need to do these things, but we don't necessarily like them. And I think that's what we have to say. None of us like the fact that our lives are so restricted, that we can't go where we want, that we may not, you know, be able to go away, we can't go to a restaurant. But not liking it is very different than just rejecting it. And what I have focused with kids is, as part of the whole resilience, is focus on what you can control. So turning that around, always acknowledging children's feelings, because feelings are feelings and you need to validate them, but that doesn't mean that they're grounded in you know, a legitimate thing that you can do something about. So if you refocus on what can you control, kids can start saying, oh, well, we can control how we react to things. We can control if we go outside. We can now have more control over when we get up, you know, when we go to sleep, because we're not traveling to school, we're not on the bus, we're not, you know, things have changed. So that is what I really help parents sort of pivot the conversation in a slightly different way so that it can be more productive. And as parents, yes, we feel bad, but it really isn't in our control, all that is going on. What is in our control is to take the precautions so that we protect ourselves as well as protecting our loved ones and all the people around us.
Children and teenagers obviously are going to react differently to the pandemic and the restrictions it's placed on our lives. And I'm wondering what words of advice you would have for parents in terms of looking out for signs that a child might be impacted versus the way a teenager might be impacted. Because I'm kind of guessing that maybe teenagers would start to get more closed mouthed and retreat a little, because that tends to be something that teenagers do to begin with.
Right. So there's some advantages actually for teenagers, because they're probably more connected with social media and video chats than the younger, so they have more outlets. On the other hand, we know as we get into teenage years, our friends become our prominent network, and we would prefer, as teens, usually they prefer to talk with their friends than their parents, whereas children are more sort of family centric. So it's helping the teens also think about, you know, what's going on in their lives and how can they connect? How can they get their needs met differently than children and having their needs met? You know, and I wrote a book actually called Conquer Negative Thinking for Teens, because what I have found is that with so many teens, they get into, and I think it's natural developmentally, they are pulling away from the families, but there's more tendency to blame. There's more tendency to perhaps focus on the negative aspects instead of like what's going right and, you know, what our parents doing right, what our family is doing right. So it helps, I think, to be able to identify with them, you know, what is the thinking that's going on, so that we can then work on what are the emotions that result from those thoughts, and then how do we act? And we want to make sure everyone stays connected. I'll just say this quickly, because the term socially distancing has concerned me right from the beginning. Because our goal is to physically distance, keep that 6 feet away or 10 feet away, and yet we want to socially connect. And that's a primary key protective factor in resilience across all ages.
Interesting. And I also was reading you saying that some mental health issues, serious mental health issues like depression and anxiety, kind of rooting their ugly heads earlier now. And I'm wondering if you think that's more because parents are able to see their kids and see their reactions in more of a close-up way than they would if the kids were at school for most of the day, or if it's because just all of the stress with the pandemic is bringing that out earlier than it normally would.
I think it might be somewhat that parents are having the opportunity to observe their children more and spend more time and see that. But I think that it's probably more of the circumstances of what are going on. If we think about anxiety, what we tend to do is what we call catastrophize. And catastrophizing is jumping to sort of worst case scenarios. And this whole pandemic has lent itself to that because there's so much unknown. And even though younger children may not be following the news and, you know, to listen to anything, they hear things from parents that can then be misinterpreted. And that's why I think the communication is so absolutely critical. But I do think a lot of it's the situation. And I, you know, what we have observed too is that kids who perhaps had more tendency toward depression were feeling even more isolated and didn't have the ability to interact with activities. One of the treatments that we use for depression, for example, is something called behavioral activation. And that is doing things. It's being active, actively engaging in pleasurable activities. Well, that's really been cut down. And I think that's where, as parents, we need to really make sure that there are activities that are manageable within the home or outside, but still active and still engaged with, while acknowledging that, you know, this situation is difficult for everyone.
Would you consider then that these diagnoses are going to be lifelong or temporary?
You know, I worry that we certainly are going to be seeing and are seeing an increase. It's difficult to sustain, say if it's going to be sustained. I subscribe to cognitive behavior therapy, which really says that you can change these things. You can change your thoughts, you can change your behaviors. And when you change that, then your emotional state changes. So especially with children, it's, you know, our literature is very clear that we can change, you know, we can build resilience. We can also challenge a lot of the anxious thoughts, and we can challenge a lot of the depressive, sort of when people start zooming in on the negative and what's wrong, instead of like, what are the okay moments of the day? You know, we're not full of joy every day, but there certainly are many moments that bring a smile, or at least that are okay. So my hope is that, yes, there will be some of the traumas and memories from this time, but I'm hoping that with concerted efforts, and I will stress that, I think we really need to put books and time into mental health awareness, as well as social emotional programming at schools, in order to really ward off perhaps a greater wave of mental difficulties.
Our Nobody Told Me conversation continues in just a minute after we tell you about BetterHelp online counseling. You know, you're not alone if in these times of uncertainty, there are issues that are interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals.
We've certainly experienced that ourselves. If you have too, BetterHelp online counseling is there for you, assessing your needs and matching you with your own licensed professional therapist. BetterHelp allows you to connect with your therapist in a safe, private, convenient, and affordable online environment. You can start communicating in under 24 hours.
This is not self-help. It's professional counseling. You can send a message to your counselor anytime and get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, and that's why they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
BetterHelp has licensed professional counselors who specialize in depression, stress, anxiety, anger, trauma, relationships, grief, self-esteem, family conflicts, LGBT matters, and other issues. The service is available for clients worldwide, and there's a broad range of expertise which you might not be able to find in your local area.
BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. Of course, anything you share is confidential. So many people have been using BetterHelp lately that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states.
And we want you to start living a happier life today. As a Nobody Told Me listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/nobody.
Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, BetterHelp.com/nobody.
BetterHelp.com/nobody.
Is it possible that for some kids who are stressed by school or by their grades or by bullies at school, that this kind of break and doing school from home may actually give them a little bit of a breather and a time to sort of chill out a little bit emotionally?
Well, that's a excellent point that you make, because we have found, in fact, that some children actually like this. They are getting a little bit more help from their families. They can do things at their own pace, and it's taking some of the social strife away, you know, at this time. Other kids are also reporting that they really like that they can be outside more. They have a little bit more flexibility in their schedules and therefore can control a little bit more of the structure and the routines. Some are saying we like spending time with our families more. What I'm seeing is many families, because parents are not commuting or traveling, can have more family meals together or family time. So I think that yes, it can be a positive for so many, and hopefully we can take some of those positives and keep them. Of course, the problem is if you're have social anxiety or you've been dealing with bullying, you're really not building the skills to face what's going on and make changes in the environment. So that's going to have to happen at some point, and hopefully they'll get some support in that and maybe a better understanding from parents of how distressed they are at school.
How can parents help their kids if, say, for example, the kid was a great in-person student, but they have not found the transition to online learning to be easy, or also say it's a kid who was not a good student at all before and they're not a good student online either? I mean, it just seems like the support is so much less available for these kids.
Well, I've made suggestions to some families whose children really needed more support. First of all, it's difficult to sit for a long period of time for kids in front of the camera. And sometimes the teachers said, turn your camera off and mute. And they sort of felt like they were in a vacuum and far away.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that now in this next year, where most schools I think will still be at least virtual or hybrid method, we'll find more ways of engaging. Certainly, for example, I run groups and resilience builder groups, and mid-group, they're an hour long, we do a scavenger hunt. And it may be, you know, find something in your room, in your house that you're proud of and describe it to us and we'll guess. So it does a couple things. One is it breaks up whatever else we're doing. They can show us their environment and interact socially that way, but it also gives an opportunity for some movement. So I'm hoping that schools and teachers who really were not prepared for a pandemic, who expected this to happen, suddenly had to do this all online. The other thing I've suggested to parents is perhaps find an older teenager or someone a few years older than the child that you can pay, you know, not as much as a tutor, but something, and they can then, in a sense, tutor your child or spend that one-on-one time over video, because we're not doing in person, or maybe they might do it outdoors at this point. We can go over some of the material to help reinforce it, because there is a worry that kids will to miss out. It's a very different type of learning. You know, it's not hands-on and it's all verbal and visual, which limits us.
How can you help your kids deal with the disappointments they may have because they can't play on the school sports team or they can't be in the school play and all of these things that they had maybe been looking forward to and just aren't going to happen?
I think 2020 is the year of disappointments, right? The graduations and all of the sort of rites of
passage. And, yeah.
Right? You know, I think what we need to keep emphasizing is validating that, yes, this is really tough. So how can we celebrate some of these special events in a different way? How can we think outside the box? How can we be creative? And for me, some of the silver lining of the pandemic, if you want to say it that way, is that people have gotten a lot more creative. You know, I have neighbors who during high school graduation had signs on their front lawns and balloons, and they had video parties and celebrations. And one actually said to me that this was the first time his whole family was together, because he has family not only all over the United States, but also abroad. And because they did the party via video, that, you know, it brought everyone together in a different way. So I think for parents is to acknowledge and validate that this is really tough, that there are many milestones that we need to think about how we can celebrate differently, or for sometimes, how can we reschedule them? I mean, weddings have been put off as well, and you know, all kinds of markers of life. And so it gets back to the resilience of what can you control? How can you take initiative and be creative and celebrate those events? And of the things you can control, you know, accepting that you can't. So for example, you mentioned like theater and plays. What I have noticed now is there are popping up like little theater groups that are doing online, and even orchestras that are doing online. I think as we get more savvy with the online world, people are creating programs, and for parents to just be aware and consider it, or even have small pods in their neighborhood or their friend group or their family group of celebrating the child and celebrating the milestones.
Our Nobody Told Me conversation continues in just a minute after we tell you about one of our favorite sponsors, Air Medcare Network.
Much like our extraordinary guests on Nobody Told Me, many Air Medcare Network members have their own inspiring stories to share. They never thought the unthinkable would actually happen to them, but when it did, they were relieved to have their AMCN Air Medcare Network membership.
If a medical emergency arises, Air Medcare Network provides members with world-class air transport services to the nearest appropriate hospital with no out-of-pocket expenses. How many times do you think people could have used that benefit during this pandemic?
More and more, insurance fails to cover the full cost of a medical emergency. Why not take this opportunity to secure protection and financial peace of mind for your entire household by joining Air Medcare Network today? Memberships cost as low as $65 a year and cover 38 states. Plus, right now, there's a special offer for our listeners.
That's right. Nobody Told Me listeners can choose up to a $50 Amazon or Visa gift card with a new membership. Visit airmedcarenetwork.com/nobody and use offer code NOBODY.
Visit airmedcarenetwork.com/nobody and use offer code NOBODY.
There seem to be a lot of parents who are considering the possibility of their child seeing a therapist now, given everything that we're going through and the ease of being able to communicate with one remotely. And you've really been ahead of all of this for years. I believe you've been treating some patients remotely for almost a decade before the pandemic even started. I'm wondering what your experience has been with that in terms of, do kids seem to open up more to you if you're remote versus in person, and what parents might think about doing this for their kids if they've never seen a therapist before?
So I think it depends on the age. Certainly the younger children have a more difficult time engaging, talking like 5 or 6 year olds, you know, because so much of the therapy might involve some games to help them talk or toys. But actually we get creative and we play games online as well, not like formally, but games that we have put on PowerPoints, game boards that we put on PowerPoints, and there are online spinners that you can use. So, you know, it's work to engage. So at the younger age, we've tended to shift more to the parent work. But I have found the kids engaging. Again, you have to sometime also get movement in there. We teach them relaxation exercises. You have to switch it up, because in-person therapy, you know, you meet them in the waiting room, you go back to the room, you might look at the toy room, you might look at books, you might look at different things, and there's like natural movement built in. And I think that's one of the key things that sometimes people miss, switching to online, that is important to incorporate. As you said, I've been doing this for many years now and have co-led a national task force or committee on telehealth, promoting it, because I see so many advantages to it. You miss some of the facial, you know, you have to really tend to like the body movements. You need to be more aware as a therapist, and kids need to clearly be able to see the whole therapist too. But at this point, you know, the convenience of it and really for most practices are remote at this point until, you know, until a much later date when everyone is safe to be back in person. So I would say the research clearly shows that this is an effective mode of treatment, and it takes a little bit more to engage because you have to do it differently. So it has to be some pre-thought and perhaps some preparation of materials. We have a whole folder now where we have collected different games that we have created, including Jeopardy games and card games and drawing games, because now with the videos, you can share whiteboards. And so kids can draw, even the younger kids, if they can't always express it verbally, they can draw and share that whiteboard.
What things should parents be paying attention to in terms of their own emotional health as we struggle through the pandemic? If they're worried about financial issues, if they're worried about the kids, if they're worried about health issues, how can they stay healthy emotionally while this is going on?
Right. Well, 2 points. I think that parents serve as role models. So our behavior is stronger than our words. So what we do and how we do, kids watch us and we serve as models. The other thing is that kids hear and interpret or sometimes misinterpret what they hear. So it's quite important for parents to take care of themselves so they feel in charge of whatever it is they are in charge of in their lives. I use the analogy of the oxygen mask in the airplane. You know, put on your oxygen mask first so that you have enough air that you can then give it to your child. And the same, you know, the analogy holds true now. Take care of yourselves. Get enough sleep. Make sure that your schedule is such that you're balancing all the aspects of your life, including work and childcare and exercise. And exercise, I don't really mean like gym, going to a gym exercise, just walking or movement and making sure you take care of your body and eating and taking care so that if you find yourself with a short fuse, then you can stop and say, okay, wait, what do I need to do? How do I take care? Sometimes it's appropriate to raise my voice, but if it's a little bit too much, then rein it back in and try to think about what you can do for self-care. I do worry about parents focusing so much on caring for their children, which they need to do, that sometimes they ignore their own needs and then are exhausted. I think it is probably clear that especially at the beginning, you know, March, April, June, everyone was walking around exhausted because things were changing constantly. And so that's another thing to know as a parent. How tolerant of you are you of uncertainty and change?
At the end of each show, we always ask our guests, what is your nobody told me lesson? So what did nobody tell you about the impact of trauma and the power of resilience before the pandemic that you wish that they had? Because my goodness, you must have learned so many things, even though you were the expert before. You must have learned so much during this.
You know, I think what I have learned is that, you know, going with the flow is easier said than done. And when the flow is constantly changing, mm-hmm. then we need to take note of it and say, all right, if those waves are coming at us quickly, what can we do? And it may be walking back onto the sand until you're ready to go into the ocean again. And so pace has, I think, is the, nobody really told me how important pace is. And pacing ourselves and pacing our routines and really prioritizing what are the most important things, what are the things that we value, what are the most important things, and what are the smaller things that we can let go.
For the most part, will we be stronger when this is all over emotionally, or will we be burned out?
That's an interesting and complicated question. So I think it depends how many traumas you have faced. And I think there are many families that are facing financial stress, perhaps even losing where they live. Those are huge traumas that are much more difficult to overcome. I think if you know that and you take it in, there's something that we call post-traumatic growth. I think there is some growth, you know, the old saying of what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. Mm-hmm. But I think it takes a toll. So I think it's somewhere in between there that there are many aspects that perhaps will make us stronger. And there are other things that are just going to be painful when we think about, especially if we lose a lot of resources. There's a lot of grief that we really haven't talked about, you know, family members dying. Not necessarily of COVID, but of other illnesses, and we've not been able to properly grieve. So I think in the long term, what can help with some of the traumas is to go through some of that grief work, even though it might be a little bit delayed.
And how can people connect with you on social media and read some of these amazing articles that you've contributed to?
Well, I'm active on Twitter. Every morning and night, I try to tweet things that are relevant to mental health, and that is at Dr. Mary Alvord. And Alvord Baker & Associates has a Facebook page, as well as a nonprofit that I started, which I haven't really talked about, but the nonprofit goes into schools and runs resilience builder groups. Unfortunately, we have to stop right when the schools shut down, but we're hoping to get back in. And that's called Resilience Across Borders. It's a charity that I founded a few years ago to really sustain the work that we're doing, but to be able to reach higher poverty, low income community schools and help everybody.
And you have a website as well?
Yes, it's alvordbaker.com. And the nonprofit's website is resilienceacrossborders.org. And as you mentioned, I have the book, Resilience Builder Program for Children and Adolescents. And then I have more recently the workbook for teens called Conquer Negative Thinking for Teens.
Well, Doctor, it has been a pleasure to talk with you, and it's been really eye-opening and informative, and I really think that your advice will help a lot of people.
Thank you. I hope. Well, you know, the other thing to remember is we're all in this together, so yeah. No one is alone, and we have to reach out to all of our support networks and get strength from one another, knowing that everybody is impacted on this.
Yeah, and that does make it a little bit easier to think that we're all uncertain, but at the same time, we're all going through it together. So try and use it as an opportunity to, have
connect,
more empathy.
Reach out,
and
yeah.
Well, reach out and parents can reach out. I mean, when my kids were young, you know, I learned so much from other parents, you know, their friends' parents, and we would network and find out things about our own children sometimes, about each other and what was going on. And I strongly encourage parents to do that now more than ever. Network, find out, is your child having this kind of a symptom? You know, is it lasting? Is it something out of the ordinary? Are they isolating too much? And then also, if it's beyond getting some advice from parents, reach out to pediatricians or a mental health provider.
Thank you so much. Again, our thanks to Dr. Mary Alvord. She's the co-author of Resilience Builder Program for Children and Adolescents. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.